to episode 122 of the Highly Relevant Podcast, a Latinx show where I interview the people and discuss the moments that are shaping our American and Latino pop culture. I am very psyched about my guest today. If you've listened to Latin music in the last 30 years, you've heard the songs of Rudy Perez. He wrote this one.
Y volar, volar tan lejos, donde nadie nos obstruya el pensamiento.
And this one.
El dolor de tu presencia no me deja ya vivir.
And this is one of my favorites.
Te amo con la fuerza del viento. Te amo en la distancia y el tiempo. Te amo en la alegría.
That was Vivir Lo Nuestro with Indian Mark Anthony, El Dolor de Tu Presencia with Jennifer Peña, and Mi Corazón Insiste with Giancarlo Canella. Now he has a brand new memoir called The Latin Hitmaker, My Journey from Cuban Refugee to World-Renowned Record Producer and Songwriter. And in it, he reveals how he got Christina Aguilera to sing in Spanish, the pressure he felt to write Luis Miguel's next big hit, how José Feliciano changed his life, and his dream to one day do a musical on Broadway. It's going to be a fun interview, but before we get into it, it's time I give you my weekly pop culture news recap in a segment I like to call Jacked In. Let's begin with the top movie news of the week. Argentine director Andrés Muschietti's It Chapter 2 starring Jessica Chastain will open to the tune of $120 million. Toy Story 4 has crossed the $1 billion box office, making it the fifth movie to pass a billion for Disney and setting a new record. Robert De Niro and Shia LaBeouf to star in crime drama After Exile, and based on the movie Field of Dreams, the Yankees and the White Sox will have a real game at the Field of Dreams location. In TV news, Aubrey Plaza's new comedy Hope will air on Netflix. Ewan McGregor is in talks to do an Obi-Wan Kenobi series on Disney+. Telemundo buys Argentina's Underground Producciones. Kevin Hart will star in the superhero comedy Nightwolf. And Univision is begging media companies to buy them. Switching over to music, Jay-Z is partnering with the NFL. Placido Domingo has been accused of sexual harassment. A Princess Diana musical is coming to Broadway this spring. And Juanes sings in Spanish with Alicia Cara on The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon. Have a listen.
Amor, te siento cerca cuando estamos lejos. Porque te llevo aquí en mi corazón. No sé perderme de tu amor.
Quizá mañana cuando estemos viejos. Y se nos arruga un poco el corazón. Sabré querer mejor.
And in tech and social media news, Spotify is planning to jack up its prices. Twitter tests hiding direct messages it thinks are abusive. TikTok is flooded by scammers promoting adult sites. Apple is looking for new office space in New York City and could be revealing a new iPhone on September 10th. And Instagram now lets users flag misinformation. The iconic Grammy Award-winning songwriter, producer, and arranger Rudy Perez has released his first memoir called The Latin Hitmaker, My Journey from Cuban Refugee to World-Renowned Record Producer and Songwriter. It tells Rudy's inspirational story from being a young Cuban refugee arriving in Miami to international music stardom. He's produced more than 70 albums, composed over 1,000 songs, receiver of numerous number one hits. He's written and produced music for the biggest names in music, such as Beyonce, Natalie Cole, Jennifer Lopez, Christina Aguilera, Michael Bolton, Luis Fonsi, Cyndi Lauper, Julio Iglesias, Luis Miguel, and countless other huge names. I welcome Rudy Perez to the Highly Relevant Podcast.
Hi, Jack. So glad to be with you and your audience, man. I'm blessed when I hear you say all these things. You know, it humbles me, you know, because when I started out, I was sleeping under a console in a recording studio with a mattress that I had and had nowhere to live or go at this time of my life. And I was, you know, just an assistant engineer trying to figure out the recording world, you know, and I would have never dreamt that, you know, people will be talking like that about me. It really humbles me.
You know, it sounds to me like this memoir in your whole life is a rags to riches story. It's that typical American dream. It's the one that Cole Porter sang about. It's the one that George Gershwin wrote about in his music. It's really about the American story, the American dream. But Rudy, why did you want to write a memoir now?
You know, I turned 61 years old this year, and I was talking to my wife, and we were reflecting and kind of looking back at my career that began when I was 17 years old. And I said to her, you know, I have so many stories and so many positive, you know, experiences behind the scenes with a lot of legends, and also with my struggle, my own struggle of coming, you know, from Cuba at 10 years old with nothing but our clothes on, our parents, you know, my father was in Castro's jails for all these years. And you know, we almost didn't make it out in the last freedom flights to Miami, to Liberty. And basically getting here and getting thrown into the school system without speaking a word of English. And talk about bullying, because, you know, I grew up in neighborhoods, inner city neighborhoods in Miami, like Liberty City and Alapata. And, you know, which was predominantly Black. And you know, I didn't know the language. So it was tough, you know. But, hey, I thank God for all that poverty and everything, because, I went to church and I learned to play various instruments in church. And my, you know, my grandfather was a minister and my dad was a pastor. And so I, you know, I kind of grew up like playing in church and learning if the drummer got sick, I would be playing drums. And so, you know, it was a good time and a really tough time, the whole transition from Cuba. So, you know, it's been a formation of years that has taken me. And yes, this book is very much a rags to riches story that I wanted people to be inspired by. And you know, I said to my wife, Betsy, of 36 years, if I can inspire somebody, motivate or encourage anybody, you know, to, hey, Rudy did it, I can do it too. You know, I just want to spread the message of love and inspiration.
Rudy, is it difficult to open up about your private life at any point in your life? And how did you get through that?
You know, there was things I never even told, you know, when our dear Lord spoke to me. I was just a kid, you know. I had gone through a whole experience of, you know, traveling with a band, you know, when I was like 17, 18 years old. I met this girl in California and I got her pregnant. And, you know, I was 19 years old and I had a daughter and I was going through a lot of phases, you know, where I, you know, cause I took a lot of wrong turns, Jack, you know, in my life. I was in gangs. I did a lot of things that I'm not proud of, but that's one of the reasons the book, you know, it to me is a very important vehicle for people that, especially young people that may be reading it or listening to our interview right now, that, you know, maybe getting involved in, you know, things that are going to get them into trouble. You know, I really believe that everybody can make the decision of taking the wrong turn. But man, if you take the right one, there's so many wonderful things that can happen to you, you know, because there's so many great things, especially if you're passionate about something and you put a lot of work into it, you could do anything, man. You could change the world. You could change pop culture. I had no idea. And the possibilities, by the way, growing up in the neighborhood, I kept hearing all the old people saying to me, hey, man, don't dream that. Because, you know, when I was young, I used to say, one day I'm going to write songs. I'm going to make people so happy with my music that I'm going to pack a whole theater full of people. I'm going to be able to touch people's hearts with my music, and I'm going to work with big stars. And they used to say to me, hey, kid, don't dream that big, you know, because your future is in this neighborhood, man. You're going to work in that convenience store over there, the gas station or the hardware store. You're never going to get out of here. So, you know, don't harm yourself by dreaming that big. Now that I'm 61 years old, I realize they were really, you know, trying to get me to prove them wrong. And I did, luckily for me and for God, that was always there.
What was the most difficult thing to talk about in this memoir?
Well, one of the most difficult things was when I got this girl pregnant and I had my baby, my dear daughter, Jennifer, who I adore, who's now 40 years old. And doing very well, editor-in-chief of a very important magazine for the Miami Herald. And, you know, I'm so proud of her. You know, it was an experience, a young experience that there was something that happened in my life. And look what a beautiful thing came out of, which is my daughter. But when I met Betsy, the first year we were together, Betsy got pregnant. And I was so fearful. And I had so many... You know, just I could call it fear, man, because it was just I didn't want responsibility. I didn't know what to do. I was a kid. I didn't know, you know, I was living in a studio. I was a mess. And so I convinced Betsy to have an abortion of my first son, Chris. Mm-hmm. And this story, my kids didn't even know about it until they, you know, I told them about it, that it was going to be in the book.
So this was recent that you told them about it.
Yes, absolutely. Because, you know, I talked Betsy into going to a clinic. We went to a clinic together, crying all the way there. Betsy was inconsolable, man. And, you know, we got there and there's about 25 girls sitting in the waiting room, and we got in and they gave her a form to fill. So I was so, you know, full of anxiety and just going out of my mind. I said, hey, I'm going to go out there for a minute in the car and just, you know, clear my head. So I went to the car and I sat in the car, and all of a sudden, man, everything disappeared around me. I knew I was in the inside of this light, because all I could see was a light, and I knew my body was in there, and I could feel that I was in there, but I couldn't see anything but the light. And the light started telling me, hey, don't do this. You cannot allow this to happen. Go back in there. Stop it now. And, you know, when I came to and I realized that I was sitting in my car, I ran inside. Luckily, Betsy was about to go in with these people. And I took her by the hand. She was 19 years old. I broke the contract. And I said, you know, I don't know how, but by the grace of God, we're going to have the baby. And I love you. And I'm sorry I put you through this. And, you know, when we walked out, it was funny because it was like a movie scene. All the girls started clapping and they were all in tears. And so we, you know, we prayed for about 8 months. At that time, I don't think we had tests so you could see the child's gender. And so we didn't take a test for we just pray. We wanted a boy. We wanted him to be blonde and we wanted him to have blue eyes. And man, my son Chris came out Christian, and he is the one of the greatest things that's ever happened to me in my life.
I remember when I first heard your name was usually coming out of the names of singers on, you know, El Show de Cristina and Sábado Gigante. Yeah. Somebody was always dropping your name, whether it was the Latin Grammys, Gracias a Rudy Perez, you know, it was always... Who's this guy, Rudy Perez? But he makes great songs. And so my understanding of your existence was in the Spanish language market. But what a lot of people don't know is that, you know, you're one of those people in the music industry that is known for convincing English language artists to sing in Spanish. And I think that the best example of that was Christina Aguilera's Spanish album, Mi Reflejo. What caused you to come up with that idea? How did the industry receive English language artists singing in Spanish?
Well, you know, I'm a kid that grew up here since I was 10 years old. So I joined band when I was 12 years old, 13, and I till I was 20 years old, I was playing top 40 music. And so I grew up with a very American top 40, you know, pop. World, even though I was, you know, studying classical and studying a little jazz, and I was playing gospel and all that stuff. I had a really pop, because really, truthfully, I really wanted to become a pop star myself and as a singer. And that's what I really wanted to do. But, you know, I got signed when I was 23 years old to RCA International by Jose Menendez. And you may remember that name because he's the Menendez boys' dad who they killed. And Jose Menendez signed my first contract. He was the CEO globally of RCA Records in all languages. And, you know, they sent me out to promote my record. And I get to Puerto Rico to promote my single, which was top five by the time I got to Puerto Rico on the radio. And I'm walking out of an elevator on a Sunday to go get a drink by the pool. And there's a beauty salon there. And I see one of my all-time heroes, which is Jose Feliciano.
Of course.
And Jose Feliciano is sitting there getting a manicure. And I couldn't believe it, Jack, because, you know, Jose was, to me, he was like a hero. You know, Jose started, man, you know, begging for money with a hat and playing an accordion in Greenwich Village, you know. And He was a hero. He's a Latino that had a top series song with Chico and the Man. He was always in the top concert, you know.
But he was a mainstream Latino.
Yes, he was a mainstream. He was probably one of the first crossovers. I mean, you will see Santana, you'll see Ricky Martin, you'll see some major legends said, you know, if it wasn't for Jose opening the door to a lot of us, maybe things could have been different. And he's a pioneer for sure. But let me tell you, he is a guy that when I approached him, I couldn't believe I was seeing this guy sitting there. So I said, you know, I got to go in and say hi and introduce myself. After all, he's from RCA and so am I. So I went inside and I said, Jose, I'm your biggest fan. My name is Rudy Perez and I love you, man. You've been such an inspiration. And he says to me, you know, Rudy, you're with RCA too, right? And I said,
Oh, wow.
I can't believe you know this. and he says, man, you know, there's a song of yours that I love in your album. Jose Menendez played it for me in New York. And there's a song that I would love to cut on my album. And I said, Jose, I was shocked. I almost fainted. And he says, like, I asked him, I said, what song is that? And he goes, Que voy a hacer sin ti. So he starts singing this song to me. And I nearly, you know, dropped in the floor. And so he says to me, hey, kid, you have any more songs like that? Why don't you come up and have a drink with us in my suite?
Wow.
He was surrounded by a bunch of big people around him, like Tite Cure, who was a big songwriter back in the day in Puerto Rico. And, you know, I remember Tite Cure putting his hand around my shoulder and saying, hey, kid, you're in. He likes you a lot. So we got to his suite. And he hands me the guitar and he says, play some more songs like that one. And I started playing him some more songs. And every song I played him, he would say, I want that one too. And I'm going to record that one too. And all of a sudden, he turns to his manager, Rick Hansen at the time, and says, Rick, man, this is the guy I've been waiting for a long time. This kid has got the stuff, the next big thing.
He's special.
This kid, I want him to work with me as a producer and as a songwriter, because, you know, when I was playing the song and explaining to Jose the form of the song, and, you know, after playing it top to bottom, I would go and say, Jose, and by the way, when you're singing this part in the chorus, the strings are going to be singing this counterpoint right here. And then, you know, the background vocals come in this part, you know, and he was going nuts. And so I said, listen, I'm honored to give you my songs. And he said, no, I want you to work with me as a producer too. So Rick Hansen, the manager, says, hey, wait a minute, guys, let's take it a step at a time here. You know, Jose, no offense to Rudy, you know, Rudy's a very gifted, obviously, I don't know anything about this. You are the expert, but you know what? You've already hired the top producer in the market. And, you know, of course you have the best songwriters trying to pitch you songs. So, and you're a songwriter yourself. So, Jose, I think we should look this down the line, you know, look at this down the line with Rudy and maybe next record, and you guys can work. And Jose said, listen, Rick, if you don't see this kid's talent, if you don't hear it and you don't see it, you're the only blind person in this room. can you believe this? And I thought he was going to he was going to cave when Rick said, yes, Jose, I get it. But you know what? We have a contract with RCA. They're going to be going crazy about this idea. What do I tell them? And he said, you tell them that I've changed my mind and the new producer and songwriter is Rudy Perez. And that's it. And there's no arguing about this. And that's the way I want things to be done. And man, a month later, I was in LA working with Jose and having Luminary, cast from David Foster. Everybody was on the album. And the first thing I do with Jose as a songwriter and producer gets nominated for Album of the Year and Song of the Year, which was a song that I co-wrote with my buddy Jorge Luis Piloto, that we did a song called Por Ella with Jose, who was at the time one of the biggest stars of Mexico.
Yeah.
They called him El Príncipe de la Canción, the Prince of Song. And this guy sold millions of albums. And so, you know, the Cantaré Cantarás was going on, and I was in the middle of Jose's album. And Cantaré Cantarás, as you know, was the We Are the World in Spanish.
That's right.
And so we went to it, and all the biggest stars were there, Julio, everybody. And Jose you know, Jose comes over, Jose comes to say hi to Jose Feliciano. And I didn't know that before they were both famous, they were in a jazz trio that traveled all of Mexico.
Jose, I didn't know that either.
Playing guitar, and Jose playing bass.
Holy.
Surreal.
Wow.
So Feliciano turns to me and says, "Hey, Rudy, could you write a song for both of us to sing on the album?"
No mejor.
And I said, "Wow, what a privilege." So I started working on the song in LA, and then I called my buddy Jorge Luis Piloto and said, "Hey, why don't you finish the song with me? Let's get into it." And we wrote basically a story about two guys that are in love with the same girl, but they decide that, you know, they're going to keep their friendship and honor their friendship and let her go, and just, you know, and they're toasting in a bar, you know, to a cocktail, and saying, you know, "Hey, let's toast to her, you know, that she'll never know that we were both, you know, head over heels about her."
Talk to me about your creative process. I've tried writing a song. It's hard. I get through a verse and then I don't know what to do next. So explain to me why it looks so easy, and why when you do it, awards immediately, people immediately are compelled to be around you. It's a talent. Is it God-given exclusively, or do you have something to do with that as well?
Well, yeah, first of all, it definitely is God-given. You know, you have to, it's something that I've had my entire life that I don't know why I got it, but I have it. And it's like, I think everybody's special. You know, John Lennon said it best, we all shine on. And I really sometimes can't even explain when people ask me, how do I write a song? It's like one of those moments that you'll be, you know, at a dinner with a bunch of people, 20 people, and all of a sudden somebody says something, a phrase or something that just bang, something pops in your brain. And all of a sudden you're there talking to all these people, but you're hearing this melody and this phrase that somebody within the conversation said, and you're already getting a melody for that phrase. And it may be a verse melody, or maybe the leading, you know, phrase of a chorus. And so and you know that nobody else there is listening to this except you. It's all in your head. You're listening to it. And sometimes I say to my wife, you know, yes, there's a lot to do with skills. You know, when you become a successful songwriter, or I guess movie script writer, you know, the commerciality comes into place and people, you know, call you and they expect you to write a hit every week. So the skills, that's when that just, you know, comes in and starts taking over. But my best songs have been the ones that I haven't forced. In songwriting, in inspiration, I believe everything in art comes from pain. And I think all the things I went through as a child, all the adversities that I went in through my life, you know, my brother going to prison for 15 years at 21 years old, and seeing my mother suffering the way she did, and coming from Cuba, and the turmoil of being born, and then, you know, 3 years later, I'm in a communist country and my father is arrested and taken to prison. I mean, all that crazy stuff. And then growing up in the hood and all that stuff, I think is what the reason I write songs that people can relate to. I believe, because I felt the pain when I talk about a lost love or something, you know, it all goes back to that pain, that pain that most artists sometimes talk about it. And I've never done anything in my life, Jack, for winning an award or thinking of fame. Today, I see a lot of people that just want to be famous, and they just want to be successful, famous. They don't care about what the purpose of a true artist is, a true songwriter, a true singer, or whatever you are, which is basically to communicate and give people what they search for. You know, people have a lot of problems. People go through a lot of stuff, man. But when they go to see a concert for that hour and a half, you know, they forget everything, all their troubles, all their stress. So it's a huge responsibility. And I think if artists are doing it just for success and fame, they're never going to make it. They're truly never going to make it. You got to do it really from your heart to make people happy, to make people, you know, feel something, whatever that is. And I can't never explain how songs come to me. I hear them. I can be watching a movie. I always tell the story about Ayer from Luis Miguel. That song, I was inspired by a movie called Somewhere in Time. And later on in years, I got to meet Jane Seymour, who was the star of that movie. And she actually took a CD of Luis Miguel's version with my lyrics translated to what I was saying in Spanish with Luis Miguel into English. And she took it to Steve Reeves, you know, who was Superman, who was her co-protagonist in Somewhere in Time.
Yeah.
And told him how that movie had inspired me to write Ayer, which is called Yesterday. And it was a huge hit by Luis Miguel, sold millions of copies. And it was the first single of Arias, the album Arias.
I remember.
And you know that I was for 16 days, Jack, I was in my house. Everything that I wrote, I had a huge responsibility. Luis Miguel was coming off the big Bolero Romance album that had sold like 7 million albums.
Oh, it was a phenomenon. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, he was doing the Latin standards all with lush strings and this young kid with a tuxedo singing beautifully. So people ate it up, you know, like hotcakes. And so, you know, it was my responsibility now to write the first single with David Foster. And so, you know, I start writing lyrics and I couldn't come up with anything interesting. I thought everything just sucked. It was, I mean, for 16 days, I had papers laying around in my house and laying around and I was going crazy. And every two or three days, Luis Miguel would call me, "Hey man, give me something. Let me hear what's going on. I'm dying." And I would say, "Hey, you know, I can't spoil the surprise. It's coming out incredible."
You were teasing Luis Miguel.
And go, oh my God. Every time I hung up with him, I would say to my wife, "You know what? The next time he calls me, I'm just going to tell him I can't do it. I can't do it. I just can't do this." I was in such stress. And so one night after like 10 days of this, my wife, who always comes to the rescue, she says to me, "Hey, okay, enough. Tonight, you're going to drop it. Tonight, you're going to go take a shower. And you're going to come and I'm going to cook you a great dinner and we're going to have a bottle of wine and we're going to watch a movie. Okay, tonight you're going to forget and you're going to pick it up tomorrow." So that's exactly what I did. And after we had our dinner and we had a glass of wine and we sit by the TV, in front of the TV, and started watching, changing channels, you know, looking for HBO, the other one. And all of a sudden,
Richard Collier is about to begin an incredible journey into another realm. Another lifetime in search of the love he could never find in this one.
Somewhere in Time. And it's a story about this guy that through regressions goes back like 100 years and meets the love of his life 100 years prior to his existence and falls in love with her. And then, you know, all of a sudden, I can't give it up because people have to watch it. Whoever's interested in listening to this, it's a movie that if you don't cry, you're not a human being and you have no heart.
Right.
Okay. So I was like in tears. My wife was bawling next to me. I mean, we were like so sad. And so I said, "God, thank you. Thank you, Betsy." And I hugged her and I said, that's my story right there. You know, I've always looked up to the great book writers and storytellers. And, you know, this doesn't sound like copying because I never copy anything exactly. It's whatever. If I'm reading a beautiful book or I'm reading a beautiful poetry, I try to feel what that's doing to me. And sometimes by just reading, it's the most crazy, and it's happened through time, by the way. You know, who would have known that the Beach Boys were going to inspire Sergeant Pepper? You know what I mean?
Right,
So it's like, in artists, that happens. You're listening to something or somebody. I always start my writing sessions by just, you know, playing a couple of songs, classic songs that I love. You know, recently with the Elton John movie, every other, you know, hour I'm sitting at the piano playing one, you know, your song, or playing "Sorry Seems to Be the Hardest Word."
Mm-hmm.
Because these are songs that came from the bottom of this guy's heart and this brilliant lyricist, Bernie Taupin. So I always believe the songwriters, young songwriters who have the gift, who know that they have it, because you know it if you have it. If you don't, you know, you can't lie to yourself. But the people that really are gifted and they know, the first thing I always say to kids when I speak in schools, I always tell them, look, learn the songs of the masters, dissect them, learn the lyrics, learn the chord changes, learn the different key changes, whatever it is, the arrangement. It's very important, because something might, you know, mix with your own stuff, and something may be morphing in that situation when you listen to that. But not just listen, learn how to play it, learn how to sing it. That's the key. I did a lot of that in my time, because I played for 5 years with a top 40 band. We were singing anything that was in the top 10 in any genre of music, mm-hmm. in the United States. So, you know, that's my basically creative, process.
Why is pain the source of greatness?
Well, you know, I always, even with singers, I call it the tear in the throat. You know, only those singers that have that sadness and that tear in their throat, I think those are the ones that become legends. You know, if you look at
Ray Frank Charles. Sinatra.
Frank Sinatra. You listen to Ray Charles, man, you know, and I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah, so even Barry Manilow, you know, I've come to really appreciate his interpretation of music as if he wrote it on his own, you know. I went to a concert, like, I don't want to go to a Barry Manilow concert. First of all, it wasn't cool to go to a Barry Manilow concert if you were of a particular young age. And, you know, he's the songs that you heard in the elevator, which is the stuff that people made fun of, you know, easy listening, right? Elevator music. And then I went to his concert and then he sang Mandy and then I lost it. And every other song was a monster classic hit. And I said, this dude makes me feel so many ranges of emotions. I'm happy. I'm sad. I'm, you know, captivated. And you're right. Listen to the greats and then from there kind of include your own style, right?
That's right. That's right. I mean, Barry Manilow is he's a giant. I mean, for sure, one of my inspirations of all time, you know, just great inspirations, man. I mean, those guys changed the world, and they changed it by being honest. You know, Barry was a piano player behind a lot of people, Bette Midler. And so, you know, the story repeats itself. All these creative geniuses went through a lot of turmoil.
You were such a part of Spanish language media, and I never really heard about you in the mainstream media. Why is that?
You know, I've never had a manager. I've never had a publicist. I've never had anybody representing me. Basically, it's always been me, word of mouth, people listening to my work, and then artists calling me. You know, I definitely wanted to be a singer, a singer-songwriter, and live off of making my own music. But life took me through that. And then, you know, Betsy, I was traveling so much. And then one day she said to me, look, if you're going to travel so much and not be with us, I'm going to wait for you in Philadelphia with my mom and my sister and the kids. And whenever you're ready to have a family, you know, we'll be waiting for you. And that woke me up. And I said, okay, from now on, every artist, every star, I don't care who you are, if you want to work with me, you have to come to my studio in my home and work with me in my own, because I'm not going to miss any more basketball games, any more soccer games. You know, my kids are growing and I want to stay. And that's one of the reasons I've always been a recluse. Never did a lot of press, you know. Whatever press you've seen me do is basically, you know, because the label asked me to do it or something. But I've never been a guy that likes somebody. One of my old bosses when we started Univision Music Group, Mr. Jerry Parencio, who used to own the network, God rest his soul, he once told me, you know, Rudy, I always tell my executives that the spotlight fades the suit. and people behind the scenes and behind the stars should remain that way and not try to become. And I took that to heart. And I remember, you know, hey, you know, I turned down a lot of interviews with Christina many times. He wanted to do a whole, you know, program about me. And I always told her, Christina, what am I, you know, or let's say Julio Iglesias was in the show and she wanted me to be there. And I said, Christina, okay, what am I going to do in your show? Basically take precious time from you and Julio, because all I'm going to say is exactly what you're saying and everybody else is saying,
yeah,
that he's great.
Reaffirm his greatness, right?
That's right. And so, you know, it makes no sense to me, you know, and I don't, you know, I'm very private and I don't want to tell a lot of the stories that I got to live that are exclusive to me and my soul with those artists, you know. And some artists are very private and they don't like that. So I always respected them, and just like I know they respected me. And I've always been a family guy, man. After I finish my work, all I want to do is hang with my kids, my wife, my friends, go to a dinner. You know, I always say that I work for a good dinner and a nice bottle of wine. To this day, I don't handle my business. Luckily, my wife has been doing it for so many years now. But now we have a great manager by the name of Mike Atkins, who is a dear friend, and I've worked with him for many years, and God put him in my life again. And just like me, he's a Christian man, you know, with great values and family and decent guy, which is hard to find in this kind of a atmosphere of the music business, to find people that after 30 something years, they nobody speaks bad about them, you know, have an impeccable track record. And Mike, when I was, you know, working for his artist like Jackie Velasquez.
I remember her, yeah.
You know, even though I was on the other side, he was representing Jackie and her best interest. He didn't allow. He was the first manager that did not allow for me to get screwed in the contract. He would, you know, he would make sure that I was taken care of and I was paid properly and compensated properly. And he fought for me. And that really made me see, you know, wow, this man is a real decent guy, you know, because all, you know, I've never done anything for money to this day, Jack. I can promise you that, you know, I don't like to swear, but I can promise you that I don't know how much money I make. I don't know how much money I have. I just get up every day. My wife takes care of a lot now with Mike. And I'm free to just create like
just
I've always
create.
Had.
I
just get up every morning and go make music, you know, either score or something for a movie or a trailer for a movie or do some film commercial or work with a star. You know, my life is that. And now I'm an author and I didn't even want to do the book. But Mike, my dear manager, said to me, look, Rudy, you have such an amazing story. Just consider writing the book. So I started, you know, like I said at the beginning, reflecting on this long career. And I said, hey, what the hell? I'm going to do it just to inspire people and be able to motivate them that if they have passion for something, they could go make anything happen, to never throw in the towel and never give up on your dreams.
You know, you've talked about how you've composed music for film, you've composed music for other artists, TV. What about Broadway?
It's funny you mentioned that, because I just recorded and I'm going to put them out sometime. I haven't put them out yet because the book was priority first. But at some point, I'm going to put a collection of the best like Broadway and show tunes of all time dedicated to my dad, both in English and Spanish. Two albums, and they're called Piano Bar.
And I love it.
And it's just basically me and a couple of other guest piano players. And an upright bass drummer and Ed Calle on saxophone, you know. And it's Arturo Sandoval also did a duet with me with the great Sam Moore of Sam and Dave.
Are you guys going on tour? I mean, come on, get the band together, man. Come to New York. Well, go to Brooklyn.
Well, we're definitely looking at, we've been talking to Feinstein's, you know, and because we want to do a couple of nights there. We also want to do something at the winery there too. And so my manager's been talking to a lot of those places because I enjoy it, man. I love those songs. You know, nobody wrote better songs than those guys. You know, the Gershwins, the Rodgers and Hart, you know, Burt Bacharach, those Hal David. I mean, those songs are immortal.
But here's the thing, Rudy. For example, right now we're going through a moment where Lin-Manuel Miranda is really the only source of music coming from a Hispanic in on Broadway right now. And we had Gloria Estefan's On Your Feet, which is a lot of the songs that, you know, they wrote. But we need a new voice. We need a Rudy Perez to come in with a collection of songs. Maybe it's the one from your own catalog where you write stories around the music. And they could either be bilingual or in Spanish, right, which I think would be a hot thing. But you gather a bunch of major celebrities, white and Hispanic, right, around your music and pitch that as a story, whether it's a Cuban romantic story of the 1950s, which is something I've been wanting to see on Broadway forever.
That's great.
Around Rudy Parrish's music that you either compose specifically for the show, much like Harry Connick Jr. has done many, many times. Recently, Sarah Bareilles just took out new songs and created Waitress the Musical from it.
You know, that's a great, great idea, Jack. And you know, that's you know, I thought about like Mamma Mia, for example. Bjorn Anderson, one of the members
right,
of
ABBA,
and I had a chance to have dinner one time when Universal Music wanted to do a Latin, you know, kind of tribute, Latino tribute to their music, having some of the biggest stars sing their songs, but in Spanish, fully in Spanish. And so they hired me to not only produce the whole thing, but write all the lyrics. And I got together with him and we talked about it. And he told me about Mamma Mia, what they were doing. And this is before it really got big. And I definitely thought about it. I just never thought I was as big as something like ABBA, you know. But now everything goes, because if you look at Lin-Manuel, I mean, he's relatively new and he's been around for a while, but you know, his big moment has come from this big show that he's had, which is Broken
Hamilton,
all records.
Right.
And I applaud him, you know, for that, especially like you say, because he's a Latino and he's winning, man.
But it's also a different aesthetic. It's also a different audio aesthetic. And
yes,
it fits perfectly there, but we need different styles. And your style is so, it's so prevalent. It's so piercing. Like, you know, a Rudy Perez song when you hear it.
Oh, thank you.
And so for me, I think that it's absolutely imperative that you think about coming to Broadway, because your voice is extremely needed at this moment where we feel that we're one step away from becoming mainstream within the Broadway field. We need more Latino stories. We need more Latino voices.
You know, this year, I don't know if you know that I started with my good friend Desmond Child. We started the Latin Songwriters Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I read about that.
Yeah, we found that, you know, it was mind-boggling to me that 300 years of Latin composition had been happening for such a long time, man. And we didn't have a real true, you know, Songwriters Hall of Fame for the 20 Latin countries and all genres of music to honor these amazing unsung heroes, because these unsung heroes are the ones that, you know, like I always say, I compare them to those beautiful skyscrapers in New York that you look at and you say, wow, and you only see the facade, the exterior, and you're looking at, but man, the pillars and all that are inside are the ones that are holding everything together. And those are the songwriters. They're the ones behind the scenes, the ones that rarely get the credit, usually get screwed. Everybody, you know, makes money around a song and create careers, and they go on to become multi-gazillionaires, and the songwriter is the one that always gets the last straw. You know, he's the that's why we've been fighting a lot. I'm on the board of ASCAP, and we've been fighting a lot for the rights I'm honored that ASCAP chose me to be the first really Hispanic person ever to sit on the 104 or 105-year-old board, you know. It's a privilege to me to be a part of that organization, and we've been fighting a lot for the rights, and luckily now we've passed the MMA, and so everybody's looking forward to a new industry where songwriters are going to be respected, compensated correctly, and just, you know, have more. Look at the Lopez's, for example. the couple Lopez, you know, who wrote, you know, the Frozen soundtrack and Coco.
Oh, right. I believe they're Filipinos. Yeah.
Yeah. They're wonderful. I mean, they're amazing. They're amazing. And these people, when I see that, no matter if they come from the Philippines or they come from Colombia or they come from wherever it is, you know, I think Broadway in a way is going to start changing, like you say, because already it did with Lin-Manuel. And now you're totally right. We have to continue to inspire,
yes,
not only people like myself, but inspire writers that would like to keep, you know,
yes,
Broadway alive.
Absolutely.
Because in this world of technology, that, you know, those classic things are in danger of extinction.
Absolutely. Look, I can see you do a set of mariachi songs or a scene with trios,
yes,
you know, and everything. Oh my God,
hey,
Rudy,
man,
you gotta do this, Rudy.
What about this, Jack? What about, you know, a Broadway show and call it Bolero?
That's right.
And tell the stories of how the bolero music started, and tell the, you know, the acting will be just like Mamma Mia as part of the lyrics of the song.
Oh, I can see the girl in the balcony already, and the trios,
yep,
and the boleros,
yep,
being sung in this romantic, beautiful thing. But by the way, Xavier Cugat made extremely famous back
that's
in
right.
the 1930s and 40s when he was singing
that's
those
right.
types of musics, those boleros and trios.
That's right.
The final thing I wanted to ask you before I let you go, this has been a fascinating conversation, Rudy, and we could be here, you know, for hours, but pop ballads like Sin Banderas Kilometros, songs like that seem to have lost interest with radio programmers. Why do you think that is, and has that been bad business for Rudy Perez when you hear reggaeton being top 50 in the top 50, you know, Latin song charts?
Oh, you know, man, I really respect everything and everybody, and I respect all genres of music. I just think if you give people, you know, spaghetti and meatballs, or even steak and potatoes every day, it's going to be a time where people are going to be really, really hungry and desperate for something else. And in the mainstream market, we don't have that situation where everything has turned into a specific genre of music. You know, you still have Christian pop, you still have traditional R&B, you still have adult contemporary, and you have many stations that cater to all these tastes, because not everybody wants to dance. You know, not
right.
everybody wants and I can see how the youth today is kind of straying away from falling in love, because I think they feel love hurts, or it's a commitment. And I think young people today are more focused on other things. And I think that's why the phenomenon of dance music, and in the case of the Latin thing with reggaeton, I agree with Mantovani, where the great conductor that once said, you know, music is either good or it isn't. And this is I know there's good reggaeton. I know there's horrible reggaeton, and I just hope that the industry comes together and gives different flavors, a menu, so people can choose. Okay, I want to go to this station because over here they play my favorite ballads, and if radio doesn't do that, it's going to die, and it's going to completely go away, and people are just going to go into streaming and do their own playlists, and you know what? And it's going to screw up their enormous business. They should actually give more flavors to people so that they can stay in business for a long time. Because like I said, not everybody wants to just dance, and people want to fall in. I said, yes, if people fall in love and fall out of love, I'll always have a job.
In these days,
nobody's falling in love. In these days, everybody just wants to dance. And so while that happens and things come back, and by the way, I have famous artists that call me all the time that are famous artists in the ballad scene. They call me up and said, Rudy, can't you do something about this? And I'm always saying, look, I believe that if you oversaturate something, eventually it's going to take, you know, it's going to just completely have another thing come in that's gonna change things. And hey, man, the first thing you learn in the Bible about God is that, you know, He created. And basically, I just want to continue creating for the rest of my life until the good Lord takes me in. And when I go, I just want people to remember me and say, you know, with a smile, wow, you know, this guy really helped me through some tough times with his music. Or just plainly have a smile when people hear my name.
The name of the book is called The Latin Hitmaker, My Journey from Cuban Refugee to World-Renowned Record Producer and Songwriter. Rudy Perez, thank you so much for the conversation.
Thank you so much, Jack. I so appreciate you promoting my book and having this chat with you. It was really wonderful. And my best to you, your family. God bless you all and all your audience.
And before I say goodbye, here are three tracks you might want to add to your playlist this weekend. Pa' mi entero, Marisa Moore. Al amanecer, Mogli.
Somos dos cantantes como los de antes. El respeto es en boletos y diamantes. Se me para el corazón solo con mirarte. Busca a ti, te canto pa' que tú me cantes.
Yo por ti, tú por mí. Rosalía, Ozuna.
Somos dos cantantes como los de antes. El respeto es en boletos y diamantes.
And that's it for episode 122 of the Highly Relevant Podcast. I want to thank Rudy Perez for hopping on the show. And if you'd like to support this podcast, please spread the love on social media and tell all your friends about it. You can reach me on Instagram at Jack Rico and my Facebook page at JackRico40. Remember, it's only through your support that our show can grow. I'm Jack Rico. See you next week on another episode of Highly Relevant.